welcome back to the program. Let's go, NLT President Dean Ingram. Good morning, Dean. You're on the air.
And good morning to you and your audience.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on. Well, I said, obviously, Patty, the topic has certainly engendered a lot of discussion through a number of different venues, the return to school plan. I want to clear from the outset is that the position of the association, and dare I say the position of every educator I've spoken with, is that school needs to reopen. Students need you back in school. It's important for their health and well-being. It's important for their education. It's important for parents. It's important for everyone. But in the same breath, that return has to be done in a manner that we don't put at risk the positive gains that we've made, which, again, full credit to Minister Hagee, full credit to Dr. Fitzgerald and their respective staffs. They've gotten us to a good place. The curve is flattened, dare I say, crushed today. But if you put in perspective, the jurisdiction globally that was held up as being the crown jewel of COVID response, New Zealand, in recent days, they've seen a resurgence. They've seen a resurgence that affected schools. Now, government had no hesitation on putting on ramifications, extra costs on businesses to ensure that necessary safety protocols were put in place there. But this is not something we saw in terms of our schools. If things resurge and we're put in a position where we have to move to scenario two, scenario three, the first group in our province that will pay part of that cost, a large part of that cost, will be the business community. So there's an economic benefit to ensuring that we remain in scenario one, which is why we're so concerned. We saw this, is that we see so many inconsistencies between the health and safety protocols that are in place for general public venues, government offices, our churches, our daycares, and the list goes on. That's something that really stood out to us.
But isn't it just, is it as simple as they're all different animals? They're all different priorities, of different ages and different mandates, different level of importance, just on and on it goes. So many schools, every school is different, as you are very well aware.
100%.
So isn't that just because we can't implement a one-size-fits-all when it's simply not available?
If you take the issue of masks, I can't understand myself, and I'm challenged to understand why it is that if a parent takes their five-year-old with them to the grocery store, as of August 24th, they have to wear a mask going in that venue. If you go into any government office, government building, if you go to a church service, if you go to a movie theater, you're expected to don a mask while you're in that movie. If you're sitting at a cinema for 2 hours watching that movie, you have to maintain that mask in that cinema. Again, people, space, time, and place, a mantra that's gotten us in a very good place. But these inconsistent challenges certainly stood out to us.
Okay. Let's keep some questions going on this one, because I'm interested in your perspective, and I think just to highlight some of the reasons why things are the way they are. Okay. If I'm with mom and dad, I go to see a movie. Mom and dad are there to look over my shoulder because they have no focus beyond their children. Versus in a school, well, we know that there is an unsafe way to wear a mask, which can make the mask completely ineffective. And for a teacher whose job should be to teach as opposed to clean and to monitor mask usage and hand sanitization and on it goes, is the reason why the age of the student makes the rules or the public health orders or recommendations different than we're talking about other places, like my office, for instance?
Well, I don't accept that. And the reason why is that if you look at, yes, there's monitoring of the masking, but which is more danger, more of a concern from a safety perspective, that you have to take time to monitor, which may take time away from other tasks, absolutely, or the fact that the mask is not worn at all, which is more dangerous, having a mask potentially worn incorrectly be of lower effectiveness or not worn at all? These are the questions that we ask, and again, we're waiting to hear that. I know I see a story this morning that the mandatory masks for students may be revised as a system, again, but but these are things there, and it may need. But when we look at the busing arrangements, all these things, the cohorting example. The question is, how do you implement cohorts? I mean, my son finished high school a couple of years ago, but I know that when he was in his high school classes, he had a wide hybrid of cohorts that he mixed with all of his classes. There's so much mixing there. It's why we think that. Now, back to your point you made earlier, if we could circle back there for a second, students have been out for 6 months. Undoubtedly, there are educational gaps that is so important to return to. It's one of the reasons why we've been advocating for smaller class sizes. Had that independent review been undertaken, again, circling back, and no, we can't go back, we can only go forward. But this is an example of why it's so important to take a serious look at what resource we have in our schools. Our schools could be more responsive to needs we have today had those been initiated. And for us, we see such a consistency between what's presently in place in virtually every other environment in the province, and what we're seeing in our schools, there is a discrepancy. We can look to sanitation measures. We know there's going to be enhanced cleaning protocols that had to be initiated. The question then becomes, how will that actually be undertaken? I know that the district has access, and I think Mr. Earle will probably want to weigh in at some point, or already has, that right now what's been in place is an influx of casual employees that replace those that are in. In other words, that's an influx to maintain current service levels. But if you're going to enhance sanitation requirements, simply maintaining what you have may not achieve the results that you need.
Let me ask you, and these are just an opportunity to flesh out all of these different angles. So also what we have, and I open off the show this morning with the word consistency. I think it's the very first thing I said when we got into the meet, because there has been a lot of contradictory, inconsistent messaging coming from early days to now, different province to province, insofar as masks go and the students. So I can file for an exemption if I have a mental wellness concern and or a different medical concern and get an exemption. And for me to be able to explain that to my 51-year-old buddy, do we all of a sudden set up ourselves for ongoing concerns and questions and explanations because Johnny in the that to my 51-year-old buddy, do we all of a sudden set up ourselves for ongoing concerns and questions and explanations because Johnny in the desk over doesn't have to wear a mask, but I do all day and it bugs me, but I don't have an exemption? You know, it's impossible to create a level playing field and have the level of understanding of the complexities of something like coronavirus to school-aged children as well. Do you think that factors in?
Well, I haven't seen exactly details of what that exemption process involves, but what I read was if a child is adverse to it. Does that mean I prefer not to? These are the questions I have. And if it's an issue of a child who says, I'm adverse to it, I don't want to wear that, and that's where things are too, I hate to say this, but what will happen is, regardless of what school you're in, the most popular children in that school will really guide the pattern of mask wearing in that school.
Yeah, I don't think adverse means picky. I would think that, you know, I guess sometimes officials are loath to pigeonhole people. Like, for instance, if I'm somewhere on the spectrum, and we already know that whether it be the level of noise, the amount of light, what have you, then we've created spaces where they can be protected much differently. So adverse might not mean, well, my child is 11 and still needs chicken nuggets versus someone who's on the spectrum. And it does present an ongoing issue, sensory issue, or what have you. And some children may indeed have some other ailment that can be diagnosed and approved by a healthcare official versus mom and dad that will grant the exemption. I don't know, but that seems like the logical way to go.
I wouldn't disagree, but at this stage and juncture, we haven't had clarity on what exactly that means. How is it that the exemption, how is it that the permission is granted for those things? These are the unknown questions, but when I read the word, if a child is adverse, I certainly don't have that degree of solid certainty that it means that a child will come in. And again, if a child doesn't have that, they will do be supports for school administrators to say, well, look, you can't wear this. You have to wear this, or you simply can't attend.
Yep.
These are unknown questions. But there's so many questions we have. I think it's important there. I think advanced planning on so many of these issues would have been beneficial, from the busing arrangement. Again, I heard from a busing contractor this morning that said that there are surplus buses in their fleet. But again, coming back to whatever the districts, CSFP and LESD, are able to put in place is 100% a function of the rules and regulations that come down from public health, coupled with what government makes available to the district to put those things in place. These two things go hand in hand. The district can only put in place plans, procedures, measures within the fence post that government, public health, EECD put in place for them.
Yeah, no arguments. And, of course, you know me. We've talked many times. Asking questions just so we can get a variety of different pieces of information out so that can maybe help round out the conversation. You know, inside of this, I read 44 pages of yesterday, as I'm sure you did as well. I know that it's long on words and short on dealing with some of the variables that might be the same in around the province, but different as well. You know, because there's not going to be an easy fix, an easy solution, a document that even Tony Stack calls a living document that can address the 1,500, 2,500 different gray areas and variables of what happens if, as opposed to different schools with different sizes, different ages of kids, different epidemiology, will have to have their own pragmatic approach taken and led by principals. Do you think that's just part of the background of what why there are so many unanswered questions, or do we still think that this was months in the works and comes up with very little and very, very short of many people's expectations?
I don't think anyone should be under illusion that reopening our schools is a smooth street. It's a very complicated process with a lot of moving parts. I'd certainly state that up front. It's all, and for that reason, I'm glad to hear Mr. Stack say that it is a living document that will evolve as new information and hopefully new resources become made available. One thing I would suggest, and to, there will be a tremendous pressures on our school administrators to initiate these procedures. It's why, again, we've spoken on this previously. The administrator allocations that were reduced in 2009 have put an enormous amount of workload on our school administrators. Now with COVID, so we would certainly hold that reinstating those allocations to our 2009 levels, what they were 11 years ago, and there's the demand was there. We spoke numerous times about the allocations formula. And there was need for a revision of that, an adoption of an enhanced administrator allocation to meet the needs that are there. If this school return plan is going to be a success, it's going to be a success based on what schools are able to do. What schools are able to do is a function of what they have to work with. Part of that involves time supports for our school administrators. Mm-hmm. I think certainly we've had a number of conversations about the anxiety and student mental health concerns that are out there in the system. It was real before COVID. It's even more so now. We know full well that the number of students that will return to school that will have anxiety, parents are feeling it, students feel it. There's no disputing that. The school counselor and psychologist allocations were inadequate before COVID. The 1 to 333 recommended back in 08, we've talked about that numerous times, the current one of 1 to 500. Mm-hmm. If you want to address those concerns, the counselor and educational school psychologist allocations to meet those services, to provide those services, must be adequate. And of course, class size numbers. We know that physical distance were not possible to best defensive masks, which is why I'm personally struggling. I know the 40,000 emails we've received since March, parents are concerned. We know that a petition is garnering a tremendous amount of interest. In fact, I haven't looked at it, but it's certainly pushing, if not in excess of 10,000 as of this morning. I know that for certain. These are things that parents need answers. Parents need confidence that what they're returning to. And right now, when you look at all the inconsistencies that are there, and again, for a parent, it's hard to understand why a parent taking their children to the local grocery store, a Sobeys, a Co-op, a Dominion, a local corner store, has a different set of safety protocols than them going to their dropping them off in the morning to school. Yeah. These are things that cause pause for thought, cause questions, cause inconsistencies, cause concern.
They do, and of course some of that is age, you know, the possibility for the 65-year-old grocery shopper and their risk versus the age of the student. I mean, I get it all factors in, but it doesn't make it easier if you're an anxious parent or student. Dean, appreciate your time. This will evolve, and we're always welcoming your call here on the show.
I really appreciate your time, Petty. Thank you so much.
Take good care. Bye-bye. SNLTA President Dean Ingram. Let's take a break. When we come back, Colin's there. Christine wants to talk about the infringement on charter rights during this COVID-19 pandemic. Don't go away.